Welcome everybody to a special edition of the Comic Shoot. I am pleased to say that we are back after a short hiatus. Today I'm not joined by Derek. Instead, we're doing something new. I am joined by Claudio Sanchez and Chandra Sanchez? Is it Sanchez now?
Well, it is Sanchez, but I still keep Eckert for the titles that we work on, so it doesn't get tricky.
There you go, just so it doesn't get confusing. But the husband and wife duo of Translucid, as well as Key of Z, and the other one that I can't remember right now, because you guys all know this is a live show and I can't do anything to save my life, Kill Audio. For those that don't know, because they've been living under a rock, Claudio Sanchez is one of the brain behind the Amory Wars, as well as Coheed and Cambria, which is a great fucking band. You guys have heard their music on as our intro a couple of times on this podcast with a link to buy on iTunes, so I hope you did. Claudio, I'm going to use an intro music from Coheed again. I hope you don't mind. So, how are you guys doing today?
All right, we're hanging in there.
That's good, that's good. I want to, let's just jump in, I guess. Let's just start right away. Obviously, thanks for being here, and I just want to know, where did the idea for Translucid come from? Who did it come from? Is it a collaborative, you both came up with the idea, you woke up in the middle of the night and, hey, I got this idea? How did Translucid happen?
Well, Translucid, I guess the seeds were planted when Coheed was asked to do a song for the Batman Arkham City soundtrack. I was delivered a script for that game, and I went over the script, and I thought, if I were to write a song for this, it would probably have to have something to do with the relationship between the Batman and the Joker. And in the end of that game, the character of the Joker passes away. So I thought, what would life be like, should Batman have to continue on without him? And it was almost like this. The way I approached the lyrics was almost in a first-person perspective from, the Joker, basically like a love letter. Like, who would take my place at the top of your rogues gallery, basically? And the sentiment that sort of echoed in the song is that we're one and the same. We're both deranged, deranged for each other, if you will. So that was kind of the initial. That was the seed that kind of got planted, and then one day the band was actually doing a photo shoot in this old, very old, ornate sort of graveyard, and I came upon this gravestone with the name Cornelius Slingerland on it, and I love the name Slingerland because it resembles like sort of a gunslinger flat, and it's also the name of a 1960s drum set, so. Initially, when we came up, the idea started to brew into a story that the character of the Navigator was actually Slingerland. So we started to work on this story called Slingerland at that time, and it progressed and evolved, and it became Translucid.
That is like the coolest story ever. I remember that song and that soundtrack because I got that soundtrack for free. Was it actually called Translucid? What was the song called?
Oh, the song in Arkham City was called Deranged.
Deranged. Okay, that's what it was. That's an awesome story. I guess the obvious next question was going to be, the comparison between Batman and Joker was obviously, front and center. So that's something great that you explored. Everybody always wonders, at least I know for me as a Batman fan, what happens if Joker's gone? How does Batman survive? And it's kind of interesting that, Scott Snyder kind of touched on that in the recent Batman series, Death of the Family, where, Joker is saying that without Joker, Batman's nothing, So that's really, really cool. It's really cool to get that perspective on this. Chandra, where do you fit on this? How do you guys share that load? Is somebody just scripting? Is somebody just plotting? Do you guys do both? How does that work?
Yeah, with the stories that we worked on as a couple or, as a writing team, we typically, they'll start with an idea like that, something that's a broad stroke that, wouldn't it be cool if this was this? And then we'll just kind of play around with it. So whether that's, a week-long process or if it's a six-month-long process, just kind of always going back to this idea and expanding upon it. and making it something kind of tangible. It's funny, like in this field, there's no shortage of ideas, but turning them into something that's actually a story that people might relate to or want to read is a completely different animal. So, so for us, you know, we work really closely where, you know, we take a lot of walks, we figure out where the thing's going, and then we'll sit down and get into, an outline process. We'll run it by our editors and they'll work out the kinks with us, and then we get into scripting.
You mentioned your editors. Was this a natural fit to stay at Boom Studios? They've done The Key of Z and Kill Audio, and I think they republished some awesome hardcovers, which I actually own, of The Amory Wars as well. Are those the editors that you immediately go to when you have an idea, or did you guys kind of shop around a little bit? How did Boom come into play for this series as well? Again,
you know, they're always our first stop over there. We really love working with Boom. We think that they give us a really open playing field to bring ideas to the table, and they're really receptive to the stories that we want to tell. So definitely, any story that we can put out with them, that's our first choice. For this story too, it was like we kind of had to choose a creator-owned publisher because you couldn't really bring the story to a DC or to a Marvel, or you know, it had to be in its own space where it could kind of grow and become what it was. We love our editors there. They're the best.
I do love Boom. I actually got to meet them over the weekend. Well, you guys were in Chicago. In my hometown here, Calgary, Canada, we had the Calgary Expo, and Boom had a booth there, and I got to meet Ross Ritchie and a bunch of the artists and stuff that work on their books. And yeah, Boom is just excellent. I love working with them.
They're killing it lately too, with putting out some really amazing material. And what I love about Boom too is that they put out a beautiful book. You know, it's like the hardcovers are always really well done, and you know, the collected editions they just give you a little bit extra. And for us, you know, I think there's always in the back of your mind, like taking something from a comic to maybe television or to film. But at the end of the day, we really just want to make a good book. We want to make something that's beautiful that people can hold on to and that they want to save and read and experience. So it's cool to work with people who care about that too.
Definitely. I know that Amory Wars hardcover that I picked up is just excellent, with the little bookmark built in, or whatever you call that, and like a little ribbon. Like it's everything. I'm nuts for hardcovers, so when they're done right, I can really tell. And definitely, Boom is right up there. It's something that I kind of been wondering since I saw it, and I haven't been able to really talk to him about it. I tried to get him for this interview as well, but the artist on the series, Daniel Bayless, how did you hook up with him? Was that something that Boom helped set up? Did you know him previously? How did you guys get Daniel on this project? I mean, his pages are just fantastic.
Well, yeah, I think it was Boom really brought him to our attention. We had ideas of what the aesthetic was going to be for this book. And then when we were submitted the options, Daniel's was the one that stood out. And then, you know, we did some research. We investigated sort of what Daniel has done, and we came upon a short story that he did, a graphic short story called The Deal, which was, you know, a love story between the Batman and Joker. And we were like, okay, well, this guy is, you know, he gets what we want to accomplish with this book. So I think that was really a big selling point. Plus, you know, when we went back and forth between our editors, I mean, I believe at one point they had said he had started to fall in love with the characters. And that was, you know, to hear that, like, that's really important, you know, because we, you know, being the creators of this story, I mean, you know, these characters are our children, and we want to treat them with the utmost respect. And when an artist comes to the table and says, you know, I'm falling in love with these characters, I mean, sometimes that's just that might be even more important than some other sort of deciding factors.
Totally.
It's definitely a better person to have on board than, you know, somebody where it's like, okay, here's my money, here's my script, you know, just draw it and then give it back to me. So that's good to hear.
Absolutely.
I noticed.
Yeah, and it really influences the way that you work. I'm sorry to cut you off, but
no worries.
We like to work with artists who we can let kind of live in the space, you know, and create these characters and create their world and be a part of that with us. So if somebody doesn't really care about the characters, you can feel it, you know, you can feel it in the art. So we felt like, you know, again, to reiterate what Claude said, Daniel really loved the characters as much as we did.
Speaking of which, I wonder how much creative control do you actually give an artist that you guys bring in? I noticed on the credits page that the navigator and the horse were actually designed by Dan Duncan. How much freedom did Daniel get, I guess, when he coming into the series with the characters, or at least the two main characters, already created and designed?
Well, you know, when we came up with the designs for these characters, I mean, Chandra and I put together, you know, like a sample page where it's like, okay, we kind of want to see this in the shoulder pads. You know, I think I did a sketch of like what I thought the mask would look like. You know, so we provide the artists with kind of an idea of what we envision, you know, these characters to look like. And then they sort of take it from there. You know, they take these elements and they piece them together and they create what you see on the page. You know, there was a, you know, I think there was another side of the horse. You know, we had sent this really strange horse head that we found. I think it was like a sculpture that we were trying to imitate. This didn't become the final version of the horse, but we sent that to Dan, and so there was a second version of the horse, more maniacal, you know, scarier looking, very cool, you know. But, you know, we wanted the horse to feel a little more sophisticated, so we kind of kept it a little more, you know, a little closer to a realistic head. Sometimes when it comes to character design, you know, we're pretty thorough. But, you know, at the end of the day, the artist knows what his strengths, what his or her strengths or weaknesses are. And you know, we're open to that exploration, you know, and it's certainly that, you know, echoes in the scripts that we do as well, you know, unless we really want to dictate the rhythm of the page, that'll be expressed in the scripts. But for the most part, you know, we don't want to limit the artist. They know what they do best, and we want that to come out in the final product. So,
speaking of the horse, then, is there, and obviously if it's going to happen in the story, he can't tell us or won't tell us, and that's fine. But is there a symbolism to having the horse head and the knight piece from chess? Like, is there a reason why he has this head?
Absolutely. Why he has chosen the horse, and you'll find out why in issue two. There's a scene where they communicate to each other the first time the navigator meets the horse. And there's a bit of a joke between them. But then the horse retorts with this line that's like, that kind of makes sense. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, he's really there. The horse, you know, the horse, like any good villain, is really there to make the hero better. You know, it's to really, you know, like, you know, going back to this Joker-Batman thing, there's no Batman if there's no Joker. I mean, you know, you can measure the good of your hero with the bad of your villain. And that's like what the horse is there to do. And in every sort of way, whether it's the decisions he makes or just the metaphor in there, you know. So you'll see in this line why, you know, it'll tell you kind of why he chose his facade.
So you mean I have to wait until May 21st to read that? That's gonna kill
me. No, I mean, if you want me to give it away, I can.
That's okay. We'll save it for the readers. I know over at All Comic, we for that week and since the first one came out, we've been trying to pimp it out as much as possible. You guys actually ended up getting 5 stars from, I believe, Ian ended up reviewing it. And I was going to pick it up anyway, but his review made me put it to the top of my list. And yeah, it was just fantastic. So the wait is just killing me. I'm just impatient as all hell. So, but let's not spoil it for anybody else. I noticed on the cover, you got the 1 of 6. And for something that I personally connected to so well on the first one, seeing 6 issues, you know, obviously great we get six, but, you know, made me sad that we only get six. Is there already a plan for more? Have you guys decided? Are you going to wait, like many people do with a creator-owned, until you see, like, the trade paperback numbers or something like that? Or, you know, is there a future plan for this?
Shawnee, do you want to answer that?
You know, we talked about it when this idea was conceived. I think that we kind of always saw it as a mini and as a short run that had a beginning and an end. That said, the ending is open, so it's not so closed that we couldn't continue on with it. But I think the story would be such a different story than Translucent was kind of meant to be, that it would almost have to be more of like a spin-off. And again, without giving away the ending, but, you know, it would definitely be a different book. It would be a different experience for readers. So yeah, and if it was, you know, my call would be to just kind of close the door at this point, but who knows? There's no real endings in our book world.
I guess...
Yeah, I mean, it's... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, like Chandra said, it's got its conclusion, and if we pushed any further than six, sure, it would turn into a different book. But, you know, that's something that Chandra and I do with our titles, whether it's Key is E or Kill Audio. I mean, there's always room to expand, but, you know, as a statement, as a closing statement, there's a lot of romance and poetry to these pieces, you know, when it's a finite six issues. And you'll see what I'm saying with this one, Translucent, the way it ends. I mean, you know, what you're thinking at the moment, as you read it and continue with the other issues, is it's not gonna, you know, maybe you'll come up with like your own ideas of where the story's going, but for me, I have a feeling that no one's really gonna know what the ending is until it actually happens. And that reveal is very romantic. And so I feel like, you know, just punctuating it with that issue six is just, you know, part of me is like, man, maybe it should just get left alone. But there's totally room to continue on, and you'll see what I mean.
And with these characters, you know, their relationship is so dense, and it's so involved, and there's so many instances of things that, you know, we can dream up that we can't show in a six part series because, you know, you have such a limited space to tell things. But in some ways it's almost cooler that way for, you know, for readers to kind of dream up these other scenarios and the things that we're not necessarily spelling out. I kind of like that as a reader, to be able to like put my mark on something in the way that I kind of imagine this relationship having grown and evolved. Like, I don't necessarily need to have all those moments spelled out for me. So, we hope that people will appreciate that, too.
Well, there's a glimmer of hope there, but at the same time, I completely understand where you're coming from. I guess, you know, in some instances, it's go out on a high note, and, you know, like you said, let readers decide how it ends or how it continues, I guess. So, that's a really good way to say it. As much as I would like more, so far, I'm satisfied with that answer, I guess. I was just kind of flipping through the issue here, and after the horse drugs the navigator here, I'm just kind of looking at the coloring, and obviously when you think of a, you know, a Batman Joker type series or even a superhero series in general, these type of colors really aren't something that, you know, you see a lot of. The thing that comes to mind, I guess, is the current Zero Year with Batman, where the colors are a little bit different than what they've been with the purples and whatnot. But do you guys, again, I know you guys said you had a lot of creative control designing and whatnot ahead of time, but did you pick colors as well? Like, how deep into this did you go? Where's the colorist name here? Come on, you iPad, go faster.
Adam Metcalf.
There you go. I know somebody would know. I was like, Adam something. Did he just come to you, or do you guys already have an idea of everything down to like colors or what this world will look like? Because I mean, those ending pages are just insane, and some of the best pages I've seen this year or last year, even, you know, in a while, as far as comics and coloring and art goes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Adam's like, I mean, I think he's really like a star on this book. Like, the colors for us have, from day one, kind of been one of those things that we knew were going to make or break the art. Mainly because there's so much involved. You know, there's a lot of flashback, there's a lot of present day stuff, there's a lot of, you know, movement from real life to these hallucinations. So for us, we thought that that was going to be kind of the biggest component to driving the art home, would be to make sure that the colors felt like they had these separate moments kind of contained within themselves. You know, the current scenes between the Navigator and the horse are really inspired by, you know, 80s and 90s, like, superhero colors that really pop, but obviously we pushed it a little bit even further into the fluorescence and color schemes that you wouldn't ordinarily see. And, you know, Adam had come to us through Boom, and it was just, like, from the get-go, he sent him over his test cages, and they were just so beautiful and interesting and unlike anything that we'd seen being done. Everything from, you know, even his cages with the little boy with Cornelius are these just really muted, you know, almost Western style colors. And then on the next page, they pop out at you. And, we love the colors of this book. We think they're a compliment to Daniel's art and that they really move the story a lot.
Oh, I completely agree. Like I said, as I flip through it, you go from Cornelius and it jumps into the Navigator on the roof and you got the sky and everything. And I mean, it's just a visually stunning book, and it's so damn nice to see something fresh. Even if you're taking, two archetypes like the Batman and the Joker, which obviously everybody is pretty much done. But you guys do it in a fresh way, and you guys are doing it in an interesting visual way. It's just nice to see. It's something that we just don't get enough of. So that's great. That's great to see. As far as because you kind of mentioned the hallucination, and I know I always jump ahead myself, and I always want to know what's going to happen. How much of Cornelius' story we get? Like, is it going to be completely intertwined the whole time, and we're going to get the ending of the Navigator and the horse, as well as, you know, Cornelius' story? How much of him do we get to see in, like, future issues?
You'll get to see it all. You know, I like to think of this, and this might be, you know, probably against, you know, the what I had said earlier, because I might be giving it away, but this story, I like to think of it as an origin within an origin. And so you're gonna see both of these timelines play out, and they're going to make sense together. They're going to kind of come together closer to the end, and you'll see where they sort of stand, these two characters of Cornelius, Navigator, and of, you know, the counterpart, the horse. So you'll get all of it.
Okay, good, because yeah, that cliffhanger, yeah. the cliffhanger really got me there, and it's like, ah, and obviously again the weight is just killing me.
From issue to issue, I think, you know, even like the story almost feels like, you know, in the first issue you think it's this, and then the second issue you think, oh, maybe it's more of this story, or maybe it's that, you know, that was something we really wanted to kind of show from the get-go, was, you know, leave the reader in a place where you're not necessarily confused, that's not ever the goal, but you're questioning what the story is, you're questioning whose relationships are what, and you're questioning, you know, who are these characters? Where does good and evil fall? Like, where are the things I know? You're almost struggling to kind of get your footing along with the characters. So hopefully that, you know, starts to amp up in issue two. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see if you like it, buddy. We'll see if you want more than six issues next month.
Oh yeah, by the end it's like, oh no, that's it, I'm done. Good thing it's only six.
Yeah. like, thank God that was only six issues.
Yeah, I paid for six issues. Ah, oh, come on. How far ahead are you guys? Is this series already done as far as writing goes, or is the art, like, how far ahead do you guys have to be in order to keep up with what I like to call the grueling monthly schedule, basically?
Well, the series is scripted. At the moment, in terms of the art, I believe we just started the art on the issue four. So that's where we're at.
Okay.
I think we're ahead of schedule.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty far ahead in the world of comics.
Well, I mean, especially, and congratulations again on the soon-to-be baby. You know, you guys don't have to worry about doing any last-minute scripting while you're in the hospital. You're yelling and you're trying to write in some dialogue or something.
We're like, you hold on, kid. We'll feed you when we're ready. We're finishing this last issue.
Yeah, I gotta finish this last page.
So yeah, that was always our goal. Is like, you know, we need to be done. It was plenty of time for this baby to come, so we're not panicking or compromising. You know, like compromising the writing on the last issue of a series would be a real bummer.
Yeah, yeah. Just write some ending. Oh, it was all a dream, and there we go. Hopefully, I didn't give away the ending there. Sorry, anybody. No.
No.
Oh, there's just a big long pause there. I was like, oh crap, did I guess it already? No. Oh man. So, as I mentioned before, I'm a big fan of the hardcovers and the collections, and I love seeing all the extra stuff. And I just wanted to kind of go back to that for a minute here. You guys mentioned that you guys had your own sketches and ideas, you know, before bringing it to Boom or Dan Duncan or whatever. Is that something you guys are going to share with the world and going to be in a collection? Have you thought that far ahead? Are we thinking trade yet?
We haven't really brought up the trade just yet, but... You know, as far as the sketches, I mean, when I say sketches, I mean, maybe I didn't mean plural. But, you know, there's really not a whole lot from my end to put in there. Sure, you say that, maybe I'll dig it up and it could be cool to throw it in there. But like all the other stuff is really just like photographs that Chandra really kind of pulled off of the internet. You know, so I don't know what kind of materials in there that, you know, you could probably involve like models and things like that, or, you know, so we'll see.
We love to do cool stuff in the trade. So, you know, for Kill Audio, for example, we did, you know, like character backgrounds for pretty much everybody in the series. We did playlists exclusive to the trade. For our zombie series, Key of Z, we did bits and pieces of the main character's journal that were kind of these handwritten worn pages that we included. We also, I think, included portions of the actual script in that one, just so people could, you know, check out the process and see what, you know, our scripts kind of look like. So, you know, we're always trying to think of ways to give people a little bit more if they're interested, you know, and let people have a glimpse into the process.
Script.
Yeah, now that question sort of came up and listening to Chandra kind of bring up those answers and those things that we've done, I sort of come up with an idea that might be kind of cool as an addition to the trade that sort of echoes some of the things that you'll see in the upcoming issues. And I think also in the first issue. So it could deepen the mythology a little bit. So we're all the time.
We're going to get a scan of the napkin of the sketch that you have. And everybody's going to get a knight chess piece. Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
What? a free chess piece with every trade. No, I'm just kidding. I was looking ahead at
a chess lesson.
Yeah, a chess lesson. Yeah, one voucher for a free chess lesson. These are golden ideas, you know. They're going to sell a million trades this way.
These are. But what people don't know is that really the voucher, you just go sit in Central Park and wait for somebody to play with you.
Yeah, exactly. Please, somebody, anybody. I was looking ahead at some of the covers, and the main cover artist is Jeff Soakley, who did Six Gun Gorilla, which is insane, bananas, crazy good. The pun with bananas was not intended. How do you guys hook up with Jeff? I don't know who the other variants are, but I know the first one was Ming Doyle, who's also very, very talented. Was this people that approached you like, hey, we want to do a cover for your book, like, please, like, they're begging you and kissing the ring, and like, how do you hook up with these cover artists?
Well, you know, Jeff, you bring up Six Gun Gorilla. When that came out, you know, I was drawn to that book. And I really liked his art, and I think he became, like, for us, like, you know, like, the first kind of, you know, the first option that we wanted to have on the book. And then Ming, I think Chandra had really liked her previous work and wanted to work with her. So I think that's how he kind of got involved with those two for covers. And yeah. Connor, you can add to that if you'd like.
Yeah, we've had, you know, those two were kind of like the people that, you know, Jeff and Ming were people that we knew we wanted to work with in some capacity, you know, from being fanboys for us, for their work in general. And then some of our exclusive artists, Carrie Randolph did the exclusive for C2E2. We had a cover for WonderCon that was actually done by Dan Duncan, who also did the character designs for the Navigator and the Horse. And who am I missing? I know I'm missing somebody important.
There was Scott Newman did a Phantom variant.
Yes. And, I think was that for Larry's Comics?
Yeah, Larry's Comics is the guy that does the Phantom stuff. And it looks like...
Yeah, and I think we have...
Felipe Smith did a Boom exclusive.
Yeah, Felipe. I love the work that he did on the Boom series, Imagine Agents.
Oh, amongst
other things. So he was a cool choice, and yeah, we got a lot of exclusive covers coming out by really talented artists, and a lot of those are coming directly from Boom, who've worked with them in some capacity, and are just really excited to get them in on this series. So we've been really fortunate, you know, with all of our covers. And just like Jeff, you know, on the main covers have been killing it. Like, we got the last one for issue 6 in the other day, and every time something comes in from him, like, I just want to immediately post it on the internet. So we need someone to keep us in check. But yeah, and the same on those. I mean, the colors on those are just gorgeous. Like,
oh yeah, they're
everything is so explosive.
They remind me of Collider when it first came out, which I guess now is Federal Bureau of Physics or something, and it had that orange cover that pink cover, and it just, you look at the shelf and it's like, bam, there's a pink cover, and you know, and it just stands out.
And it's
the same idea with Translucent, right? Even the first one, you know, it's, you get the pink and the yellow and the blues, and you can't not look at that cover when you're, you know, strolling through the shop or, you know, looking on Comixology or whatever. You can't miss it.
Yeah, you know, we're a big fan of Nathan Fox, and part of what we love about his work so much is that those color schemes that, you know, that just are in your face and really unusual and captivating, and Jeff's colors remind me a lot of him. So yeah, we're really excited. We're excited for you to see all of the covers, Tyler.
You guys are just, you're just, oh yeah, hey, we got cover 6 in, and oh, no big deal, and we just called up whatever artist we wanted, and they're like, yeah, sure, I'll do a cover for you. Which I see how it is.
We're here to mess with you. See, I wish that was the case.
That's what I
figured. We shut down all the time, man.
Oh, it's the comic world of, you know, secrets and hiding things, and it's because of that damn internet. If the internet wasn't around,
nothing pisses me off more than that. It's like when people post a tweet that's like, oh man, something that's gonna blow your mind. I can talk about it in 6 months. I'll tell you then. Like. Yeah. Why even post it, dude?
Yeah, it's like, you bastard. Yeah, oh, I just signed this really cool deal to write this really cool book for this real cool publisher, but I can't tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, thanks. Oh, thanks.
Oh, the internet.
Can't live with it, and apparently can't live without it, so what can you do?
Exactly.
I am out of questions for Translucent, but I do want to ask you guys... if you guys have plans already for a follow-up, if you guys are thinking ahead, if there's anything else you guys got on the go you want to share with us, you want us to, you know, shout from the rooftops of the internet, now is your chance. The floor is yours. I just like listening to you guys talk about the series personally.
Yeah. At the moment, you know, Sean and I have been toying with a follow-up for TNZ. We've just been, like, kind of slowly cutting the outline together. You know, we're a little, with the baby on the way, it's a little hard to fully commit. I have another series that, you know, another outline I presented to Boom to see if they'd be interested in making it happen. So it's like it's a superhero team story. So we'll see there. We're also working on our first children's book.
That's good timing.
So that's happening. Yeah, good timing. Yeah, totally. It was actually kind of accidental. I think it was around the time I found out we were pregnant, and I was in a hotel room in LA, and I started to put together this poem, and the poem sort of spiraled into this like persona of almost like a Ziggy Stardust kind of thing. And then I was like, oh, well, this really isn't that. This isn't this rock and roll persona that I thought it was. And it really kind of ended up becoming a children's story. But that one's called Kid Crazy and the Kilowatt King.
Very interesting.
That's being worked on at the moment. And I think that's about it. Chandra, is there anything else?
No, I mean, there are some very, like, early, super, super early projects brewing that, you know, we don't even know heads or tails about yet, so I'm not going to be that guy on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Come on. You know, you just won't tell me.
Well, you know, they're just kind of, right now, they're just little blips of ideas that are circulating, but not, you know, not at all developed enough for us to even bother with mentioning, and then it never happens, and...
Yeah. Also, there's the Amory Wars. We've been, like, at that for, like, 2 years now, trying to adapt that from the graphic novel that came out, I forget the year, but, you know, that coincided with the band's third record, that Apollo 1. So we're trying to adapt that into a serial, like, in Keeping Secrets and Second Stage, and it's just taking a lot longer than we kind of hoped. I think I'm a little too close to the story, that I'm like, you know, I keep hitting walls or I keep rejecting, like, ideas. Because, you know, there's, like, more of a team on that story because of, it just, you know, I guess it just needs it. And I need so much perspective when it comes to writing that thing that I need a team for it.
Is Peter David helping you with that again?
Not at the moment, no. But management and... you know, some of the Evil Inc. Team is kind of on it at the moment, just with me, like, trying to make it happen. And so I think we just need to find the right filter to come into the equation and really kind of make sense of it all. So, yeah.
Okay, I know that there was an album in 2013, but I have to ask, you know, you got another album in the works? I know it's nothing to do with comics. I just freaking love the band, so...
Oh no, it's quite all right. You know, that's what I do. I mean, I'm in a rock band.
And it's awesome.
you know, we've got some ideas. At the moment, you know, with the Travis, the other guitar player, just had his first in February. So this was like the year we were going to plan on, you know, working on families really. But we have some ideas for fall of this year, there's also some ideas for a new record, but you know, we're taking our time with it, just because, like I said, you know, this is the year we were going to become family men, but something will happen certainly soon.
I guess that's pretty good timing for if you and, you know, other bandmates, let's all have a baby this year, take a year off of the band and work on other things.
It was very synchronized.
Yeah.
You know you're too close to your bandmates when?
Yeah. Well, you know, Travis and I have been friends since, like, we were children. You know, we've been doing Coheed, you know, for this long. And, you know, with all of the ups and downs the band has sort of endured, you know, Travis and I have always sort of been there as, like, kind of the nucleus of this whole thing. So, you know... You know, our lives are very much intertwined. I mean, my wife likes to joke around, you know, because Travis and I talk on the phone practically every day. She's like, is that your boyfriend? You know, being in a band is a very interesting thing. Yeah, I mean, but being in a band is like, it's very, really a strange kind of thing, you know, because, I don't know, you spend your every day with, you know, a group of people and, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. There's something there, you know, but anyway, you know, we decided, well, you know, let's do this together, because we do everything else together.
We gotta be fun. Our kids can grow up together. It's like, you know, it's funny in our generation. I think the concept of, like, choosing your family. You know, obviously we're both really close to our families too. But you know, like Travis and his wife and all the guys in the band and all of our circle of friends, like. you know, we really picked them, and we wanted to have our kids kind of, like, grow up together and I don't know, like, be like cousins, you know, those cousins that you really think are your real cousins until someday your parents are like, we're not related to them, really.
Yeah, stop asking about them. They're gone now. Well, that's awesome. It's definitely something you don't get a lot of anymore. It's just, you know, family doesn't matter. It's here's your cell phone, 5-year-olds, go away. You know, so. I also wanted to ask, and again, I know, you know, with the baby coming, the answer will be maybe sometime. But I managed to catch Coheed in Calgary a couple of years ago. It was probably, and I'm a huge Metallica fan, and it was probably and I've seen them like 6 times. But that was probably one of my favorite shows of all time ever. You were playing the, the name just escaped, you're playing guitar, and your head was playing the, what the hell instrument is that? Sheldon from Big Bang Theory plays one, and the names just totally escaped me. And anyway, the point being...
Oh, the theremin.
Theremin, yes.
The theremin.
Oh, dude, that was like the coolest thing ever. I'm totally like geeking out or rocking out or something right now. That was just amazing. Me and my buddy, my best man at my wedding in September, we still talk about that show. It was that good. So when are you coming to Calgary?
Oh, cool.
When are you coming to Calgary next, man?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, well, you know, we do have a couple of things, you know, coming up. Like I said, you know, sometime this fall we might. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but something. So maybe we'll hit Calgary. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hold you to that maybe. And then I'm going to thank you guys a whole lot for doing this. I appreciate, you know, Adrian setting this up, through Evil Inc. there, and you guys actually, you know, paying attention to me. I know when Claudio followed me on Twitter after I think I mentioned something about, the Amory Wars or something, he like followed me and I freaked out and texted my buddy Spencer who went to that show with me. And I was like, he followed me, screw you. Like, you know. Just stupid crap like that. And, you know, and then Chandra followed me, and you guys are retweeting the review, and, you know, it's just excellent. So I'm super honored. I'm so glad to have you guys on the show. It's great to do the show again. It's been 3 or 4 weeks now, so it'll be a great show to kind of come back with. I can't wait to read the second issue. Seriously, please, can you put it out sooner? And, yeah, I think that's it for me, guys. I think that was...
Oh,
that was awesome.
Cool.
Well, yeah, thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, we're glad you like it.
Yeah, and let us know when it goes up, you know, and we'll help spread the word.
Oh, as always, I'm sure I'll be on that Twitter account just annoying the crap out of you guys, so that's okay. All right, so for
awesome.
The comic shoot, I am Tyler, as always. Chandra and Claudio joined me this week. From Translucid, make sure you buy number 1 and then number 2 and subsequently the rest of the issues because you maybe will only get 6, so enjoy them while you can. And yeah, thank you.